are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
For the Amy Beth Arkley Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are ya? I know, another crazy week in this never-ending campaign, almost in the rear view. Not to worry, you're in the right place. We have a robust blend of music and musings, heavy on the music, to get us through. It'll soothe your soul. Speaking of which, you're going to meet James Fearnley. He is one of the founding members of a great new indie rock Irish-Americana hybrid band. They got a distinct sound and a great name for this season of discontent we find ourselves in the midst of, called Cranky George. We'll talk with him about the aspirations and inspirations and the name, of course, in just a bit. Their debut album, by the way, drops today, October 14th. Very exciting. And by the way, it can't be all bad news in the world because Bob Dylan was just awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. No kidding. We'll salute all of that. Some of your favorite songs and requests and the Inspiration to Action Challenge success stories. And yeah, we'll take on some of the political pop culture stuff, but small smatterings today. Love to get you in the mix, too. Are you listening live? It is October 14th, a Friday, of course, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. And you know about our 24/7 Twitter feed. Chime in anytime it works for you, live or on podcast, at AB Writes. The Facebook page open today during the show only. And the show is brought to you in part by Audiophile, from music to books to podcasts. Caress your ears with everything you want to hear from Audiophile. Also by AT&T, mobilizing your world. And by PopNet, it's arts, culture, and conversation on air, online. PopNet features select editions of the Amy Beth Arkley Show. So before we meet James, let's get started with some music. As I said, it's their new, their debut album called Fat Lot of Good. It drops today, October 14th. And this is the first single called Nighttime. Cranky George, opening up a very lively edition of the Amy Beth Arkley Show. Give a listen, you're going to like their sound.
I love you, my love.
Nighttime from Frankie George on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Their debut album, Fat Lot of Good, drops today, October 14th. And we're delighted to welcome James Fernley, one of the founding members of this band that defies characterization, has a crazy name, and a great sound. Hey, James, thanks so much for joining us. Congrats on the album.
Oh, yeah, no, it's taken a while to get this far, but it's hearing it down a telephone line, it's just as soaring as it is playing it live and recording the damn thing.
It's fabulous. Well, first, we got to get this out of the way here. Tell us how the name Cranky George came about.
Well, it's got a long one, actually. Originally, the Cranky George band comprised myself, Kieran Mulroney, and Dermot Mulroney, two brothers. We were called, back then we just played in one another's garages or in one another's homes, accordion, fiddle, and cello. And then we found ourselves in a band called the Low and Sweet Orchestra with LA punk types in the band too, a guy called Xander Schloss, who was in Circle Jerks, and a guy called Mike Matt, who was in Thelonious Monster and Tex and the Horseheads. And we put this band together called the Low and Sweet Orchestra. And we had to come up with a new name for the band at that time, because we were originally called Sweet and Low Orchestra, and Tetley's, who owns Sweet and Low Sweetener, said that we couldn't use the name, so we stood in on a new name for the band, and one of Kieran's ideas was just to call it Cranky. So I kept that in the back of my mind for a few years. And then when we put together the band, myself, Kieran and Dermot, just the three of us, we decided that we weren't ever going to leave Los Angeles and play anywhere else. So the guy from It's a Wonderful Life came to mind, who never leaves town, and he's called George.
Yeah. Right,
so we
right.
put we called ourselves Mossback George, because that's somebody levels that accusation at him in the film. And so we put Cranky and George together and called it Cranky George. It was originally called the Cranky George Trio, because there's just three of us. And then we added Brad Wood on bass and Sebastian Sheehan Visconti on drums to make us into a proper band.
See, I thought it would be because George Washington would be really cranky in the middle of this election season, but that's okay. Totally different.
Well, yeah, it's one of those ones. It's one of those names you can project anything you
right,
like
exactly.
on it. I mean, George, when I was at school, was the name for a girl's menstrual period. So that's another reason why I could call it Cranky
George. We're going in the wrong direction here now, James. But you mentioned Dermot Mulroney, who, of course, is also a noted actor, so I guess maybe you thought because of his schedule that you probably were only going to be based in L.A., but then all of a sudden things kind of opened up for you guys, and you're doing more than
at the beginning, because, like, I used to play accordion in a group called the Pogues, the Pogues were busy, so that became difficult with scheduling. Of course, Kieran's a screenwriter too. We've all got sort of like second and third jobs, so it's just that's why it's taken so long to make the record is scheduling, and why we found it. And also with the Low and Sweet Orchestra, we weren't going to leave Los Angeles because we were also young parents at that time too. So I didn't want to go off in a van for 3 months.
Right. But now, do you have a different philosophy? Because it sounds like this is a side project for you guys, but yet the music is so good, and you're getting great reception. Do you see yourself touring and projecting out as a big thing, or it's always going to be kind of a small side project for you guys?
No. I don't think it will be a side project. I mean, of course, like Dermot's a professional full-time actor with a series that he's filming right now. But I do hope to find the opportunity to get out, even in California at the minute. And we've had lots of inquiries from Europe. I think Europe would be a great place to go and play. I mean, I play anywhere because I've been in a touring band for 30 years and it's my life. We'll figure out some way of doing it. I'd love to see us play out lots and far and wide.
I think you're going to get... you get a lot of requests, I think, from the sound. It's such a unique sound, and I guess, you know, you have a lot of hybrid stuff in there. You have the Irish, obviously, influences. You have the Americana sound, which is also a hybrid in and of itself, some rock. I mean, how do you, what do you characterize it as, or do you not even care what people call it, just as long as you get to play it?
I don't really care, but hybrid sounds all right. I mean, in the press release that we put out, I rather like the you know, that this music is spilled from the bucket that dredges the confluence of the Shannon, the Missouri, and the Danube, and and that's kind of about as accurate as I can get it, really, because there are plenty of influences. When Kieran and Dermot and myself first started playing accordion, fiddle and cello together and singing in Dermot's garage, there were all sorts of American songs that Dermot and Kieran knew because of them being Americans. I mean, they're Irish-Americans too, I think, but a few generations, you know, away from leaving the old sod, if you know what I mean. So there's... I rather like the American influence that comes in through all the songs and materials that they know, and the kind of stuff that I was not brought up with, but in my professional life, in any case, that I got to listen to being in the Pogues, that, you know, there was a weird sort of hybrid was going to happen, in any case, just from the three of us. And we've been playing together for quite a long time as friends, Dermot and Kieran and myself, and it wasn't until the last sort of 10 years really that that we've added drums and bass and to make it into like a proper going kind of project, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and you have this album out, which obviously it's been years in the making, and here it is, and it's a gorgeous collection of songs. I got the chance to listen to the whole thing yesterday, and it's
great.
Pretty eclectic and very infectious. Immediately you hear it, it's distinct. So that's why I'm saying I think there's going to be a lot of interest as people hear it more and more and say, yeah, that's really a cool, unusual thing. What is it? And people will identify it as Cranky George. And you got that great name. As you said, people can project whatever they want. And then here in America, political overtones for the moment anyway.
Quite useful like that. And I do like the idea that Fat Lot of Good can go two ways as well.
Exactly, yeah.
But I mean, one of my concerns about the band, you know, like, well, it's not a concern, but it's been in the back of my mind whether or not we were just too diverse, because there are three songwriters, and each songwriter sings his song on the record. So there's three distinctive voices, singing voices, and there's three, you know, voices as far as material, as writing style goes. But I think the approach that we brought to the record itself, I think notably through Brad Wood, who plays bass for us, he's a producer himself, started out in Chicago with his own studio, then moved out here, can't remember, sometime in the 90s, and he's worked with, he's made 100 albums, you know, as a producer, with Smashing Pumpkins and Pete Yorn and the Bangles and Liz Phair and Veruca Salt lately. So it's his vision too, as well, to blend it all together to make it make sense out of all those elements.
Well, it does make sense for sure when you listen to it. But tell me about, now you mentioned so each of you write individual songs. You don't have a collaboration for the songwriting process. You wait till you get into the studio or on stage to do the collaborative part.
The collaborative part would be in rehearsal, I would say. But we write separately, and then we come to rehearsal, and then, as it was in the beginning of the Pogues as well, that you can only get good by doing it again and again and again and again, and things sort of percolate up through the initial mess the songs aren't a mess, they've got a form and they've got a message and they've got a voice and an intention when we first come into rehearsal. But then there's stuff that can come up to bolster and support that come from the individual players and each individual player, if you know what I mean.
Yes, of course. What is your particular process like as a songwriter? You sit down on a regular basis, very disciplined, and say, you know, I've got to work at this? Or do you wait for inspiration, the muse, so to speak, to hit you? How does it work for you?
I don't know. I'm one of those people. My first girlfriend described me as being an open wound when I was 17, and I've never closed it up since then.
Ouch. So,
yeah, I know. I've had to live with that for 50 years. No, 40 years. So I don't know. I write things down, and I play the piano a lot. A lot of it comes from the piano. And I was a guitar player first, really, I suppose, professionally. So I just muck around on instruments, and if something sort of, you know, comes out, then I'll and it usually starts off with like a first line. Then I just go from there. But it's all to do with being an open wound, basically.
So is it that visual? I'm telling you, you got a couple of good visuals already that are not necessarily going in the right direction, if you know what I'm saying. But we'll let the listeners decide themselves.
No, I'm not going to go that way. Yeah, go on.
But please don't. But what usually comes for you? You get the first line first, or you get the first note of music first? I mean, is it music first, then lyrics, or vice versa, or they come together at the same time?
It's pretty much both at the same time. But what I'll do is I'll just worry it for a long time until the song sounds tolerable, really.
Right.
I mean, that's a funny way of putting it, I suppose. I used to be I was a choir boy when I was 10, going on 11, and I was actually quite good. I used to do solos and stuff. I was in the church choir back in Manchester, England, and at school as well when I went away to boarding school. And my voice was really, really, really fantastic. And the little choir boy of 10 and 11, I think, would his jaw would drop at what I think I can do now with my voice, because I can feel, sometimes it feels like I can't hold a note. So I have to cut the cloth to fit the suit now. So I don't tend to go wandering off into elaborate melodies or anything. I just have to stay close to home when it comes to songwriting. If that makes
sense. So you know how to do it, you're self-editing it as you go. Is that what you're saying?
I have to make sure that I have to make sure that I know that I can sing it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
I don't have to wander too far afield, melody-wise. So it's usually like within a semitone of one another, the notes, or they're just steps. I have to keep it simple.
I see, So you know your own limitations kind of cater to what you have to do in terms of
writing. Basically.
Yeah.
But as I say, the choir boy in me is absolutely embarrassed, totally embarrassed to hear what the older person, singer, songwriter, tries to get away with. Yeah.
But it works for you, so you don't have to be embarrassed. It works for you.
Thank you.
Things inspire you, do you think? Is it just daily life? Just something comes to you? Just all the emotion that, you know, comes pouring out?
Well, I'm to go back to the open wound thing again, then it's you know, stuff that happened to me, and I think what I always liked, I am a diary writer, so I like to concentrate on things. I even sort of, as writing exercises, I would put an apple in front of me and then just describe it until I got sick of describing it. I think that the dwelling, not dwelling, but I think one's focus on particular things, it's no matter what they might be, a rock or a girl or a boy or a father or a mother or a daughter or a son or whatever, or a tree even, I think that level of focus pays off. I think it's good for one's life, and it's good for one's art too,
yeah.
If I could be so pretentious.
Yes, I think you're right. Attention to detail, and then what that provokes, and then you hone your skills in terms of describing it, and the emotions it evokes. That you know is.
There's a lot to be got from a stone. Do you know?
Yeah.
Even a stone, there's a lot to be got from if people would take the time to just study one once or twice.
You're right.
Do you ever read that book by Rainer Maria Rilke, and it's called Letters to a Young Poet?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm heading for, really.
Yeah.
That kind of concentration and that sort of... You don't have to be alone to be... You don't have to be lonely to be alone, if you know what I mean. Like the solitude. I like the solitude of contemplating things. My God, this got deep suddenly, didn't it?
There's a there's a value in that. I think you're right. There's a value in solitude. There's a value in reflection.
Yeah.
And sometimes we live in a culture that doesn't always.
Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Welcome that. You know, or praise that, or leave room for that. And I think maybe we should take, you know, time away. And also just all the fact that we're so moving so fast and we're all so connected that we're disconnected in so many ways from each other and also from ourselves and from that inspirational source. I think you're so right about that. So,
you get
part of the creative process that really does require a certain contemplation and reflection that is not always easy.
And I think we should add the word engagement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're engaging with whatever in the fullest way that you possibly can. And I find, you know, poetry is high on the list for that kind of engagement with things and life and people. And you know, I kind of suppose I secretly wanted to be a poet all my life. So. Songwriting, as it turns out. I mean, I never had the occasion or the opportunity or the desire much to write a song. I don't know how familiar you are with the Pogues and the songwriting that went along with that, but Shane McGowan's lyric writing is second to none. I hope he gets the Nobel Prize eventually for his.
Do you have an opinion on Bob Dylan winning?
I think it's really dynamite. Yeah, of course you can pick out whatever lyrics you want from Bob Dylan's canon and everything and say, well, you know, what the hell was that about? Like, oh geez, where's my knees and things. You know, but in context, they make sense. And if anybody in this world was able to talk so personally to people, not just in his lyrics, but in the way that he structured a song and the way that the chords went, it's about as pure. Oftentimes, as blues has been pure in the way that just the chord structure talks to people, in the sense that here's my idea again, this is my spin on it, and this is what happened in the end. I love that structure, and I think Bob Dylan's found ways in and around that not a lot of people have.
Yeah, and he has such a rich body of work because, as you said, some of it is poetic and some of it is great storytelling. I mean,
and some of it's just silly, and what's wrong with that? Yeah.
And some of it is just silly, exactly. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm saying there's a breadth to the work that's pretty phenomenal.
Fair play to him.
So
I'm really happy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unusual and there's some controversy, I guess, as with everything. Everybody's got an opinion. So there's some controversy about whether he deserved it or whether they consider it literature. And I come down on the idea that, yes, of course it is.
Yeah.
Because if you look at a lot of the content, it certainly is. And why should it be? I mean, I happen to be a fiction writer, but I mean, why should we be snobbish about saying it only can be for fiction or it can only be for poetry? I mean, it is poetry. Like you said, you wanted to be a poet. Well, songwriting is the modern equivalent to that because poetry, well, we do have poetry, we still have poets, but, you
course,
know, it's not it's not exactly a way to earn a living these days. So.
No, I'd say not.
So,
although
yeah,
some people make a handsome living out of writing poetry, of course. I read an article today about, because one of my favorite poets is Philip Larkin. And he just didn't like Bob Dylan at all, so I was reading in the New York Times this morning, and I thought, oh, no, come on, Philip, come around. But he's dead.
He didn't like Bob Dylan? He thought he should have won it, is that what you said?
Yeah, I think, he found him, I forget what his phrase was, like coarse and whiny or something like that. But, you know, there's room for coarse and whiny people in the world.
Well, yeah, look at the political stage, not to bring
it
back to that.
No, I don't want to. No, I'm not going there again. I'm fed up. I'm checked out of that.
I mean, everybody's got an opinion on it, obviously. You know, I don't know how they decided. They obviously, the announcement came with high praise and the idea that he kind of reinvented a form and opened up new ways for poetic expression. And I think that's a legitimate assessment. But I guess every award for anything is always, there's always a critic on the other side of it. So
and there's also why are we giving awards for anything? Let's just,
that's the point. Exactly. I mean,
but back to the my particular songwriting. But when, so Shane McGowan, and I don't know how familiar you are with his work. But his lyric writing runs the gamut as well. You know, he's written some silly songs, but most of them are totally fantastic and stretching. So during my tenure as accordion player with the Pogues, which was right from the very beginning until 2014, there was no cause to write a song, because there was a songwriter right there who was you know, ploughing a furrow that nobody had ploughed before. So it's, again, all the songwriting's still fairly new to me, but I find that I've enjoyed it.
When you were in that situation, were you getting itchy to do it? Did you feel like I'm being
No, I found that there was no need for me to do any songwriting. It wasn't until... Well, the story of the Pogues is from 1982, when we first did our debut gig in London, until 1991, where we were, circumstances led us to jettison Shane, because he was his own worst enemy and basically ours as well. So we let him go in 1991, and then came the demand, well, the necessity to come up with songs of our own. So that's when I wrote my first song, which was, I don't know, daunting experience to begin with, until the guys in the band actually helped me along with it and said, you know, like, oh, really, it's a matter of strumming a few chords and then putting some words to it.
So you weren't a natural at the beginning, thinking this is what I really want to do, like some people just gravitate towards it. You gravitated towards it as a matter of necessity, is what you're saying, initially.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And then found that I've enjoyed the sound of my own voice, at least in my own head.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And then to find myself really, in a sense, working with Kieran and Dermot out of Cranky George, that we were all writing songs, you know, simultaneously. I mean, Kieran's a lot more, what's the word? I was going to say profligate, but profligate is so not the right
prolific.
Word.
Prolific.
He's so much more prolific than I am. I sit on songs for a bit and worry them, as I say. But whereas,
but it's funny how the way you describe it is sort of like your talent kind of snuck up on you, you know, in a way, because you weren't necessarily setting out to be a songwriter. You were in a band. You were happy being a musician in the band. And when the opportunity or the necessity presented itself, you kind of got pushed into it, and then you discovered that you had this voice. And as you said, you'd like to hear the sound of your voice.
Yeah, I mean,
I've always liked
to write. As I say, that I like to have written journal diary for many, many years, and I wrote a book about the Pogues as well. It was published in England in 2012, and then over here in the United States 2014. I might as well just plug it since I'm here. It's called Here Comes Everybody.
Might as well plug it. Absolutely, we'll take a look at it. Right?
It's called Here Comes Everybody: The Story of the Pogues, and it's based on. Largely on diaries and the work that I did at in a writer's group called The Writer's Way for many years. The Writer's Way is the book, but this, they are separate from one another. The book is the book, and The Writer's Way is actually a distinct entity. Writing
is that the artist way you're talking about? Is it called The Writer's Way or The Artist's Way?
Oh, The Artist's Way.
The Artist's Way, yeah. I'm a big fan of Julia Cameron, right? I'm a big fan of her.
Yeah, no, but that's Julia Cameron, but this is a woman called Nancy Bacall, who was an old friend of Leonard Cohen back in the day.
That's a different
book. She runs in West Los Angeles. I think it's called The Writer's Way.
Okay.
Anyway, so I did a lot of writing there. And then...
So you put it all together. And
I put it all together, and Favour and Favour published it in England, and Chicago Review Press published it here. I did a few book tours, and there's the sound of my own voice, but in book form, which was very gratifying.
Right, exactly. It's the way of people exploring it. That's you know how it goes in terms of sometimes your expression comes out in different ways, which I think is fabulous. So you've allowed yourself have access to those opportunities to do it, which is great. And what you've put together with your compadres in Cranky George is distinct and lively, and I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it. The album comes out, dropping officially today. It's called Fat Lot of Good. We heard the first single, Nighttime, and we're going to wrap up with a song called Greenland's Ice. Do you have a little backstory or setup for this one?
Yes, I do, actually, because this is one of my songs, and it's my voice that's singing it. And it's basically a kind of Moby Dick story about a crew that go off across the ocean, and this the captain is obsessed in getting to a particular place, and the crew they don't mutiny, but they're pissed off with the captain, but the captain is obsessed, and but then there's some sympathy for him in the end, and it's a song what I wrote, and I'm rather proud of it, and it's unrelenting and never stops and until it finishes.
Yeah, well, that's always a good way. It stops when it finishes. The album is Fat Lot of Good. We're going to hear Greenland's Ice. People want to find details about the album, how you can get it, hear samples, videos, etc. They can go to the website crankygeorge.com. We're going to post the links, as we always do at the end of the show, along with the podcast
Great.
When it becomes available. James Fernley, hey, a pleasure speaking with you. You're a very affable and funny and insightful person, and your sound
thank
and
you.
The band is phenomenal.
It was a joy talking to you as well.
And, well, thank you so much. And I wish you the best of luck with Cranky George. Please come back and see us again, okay?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, thanks very much.
All right. James Fernley from Cranky George. This one's called Greenland's Ice on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show. Take care.
Bye.
In the month of June, on the 18th day, we braced our sheets and we sailed away. And our colours flew up against the sky, but all of Greenland's ice was in the captain's eye. It was 18 months without a sight of land, no mountains green, not a stretch of sand, the belly timber gone, and the rum run dry, and all of Greenland's ice was in the captain's eye. We suffered keen and bitter blasts, our dearest hopes, they were slipping fast, and to a man, we thought that we would die, 'cause all of Greenland's ice was in the captain's eye. There came a sail out on the main, but this brave sight vexed our captain's brain. We cried out loud as the ship came by, 'cause all of Greenland's ice was in the captain's eye.
over. Greenland's Ice, Frankie George on the Amy Beth Erkley Show from their debut album dropping today, Fat Lot of Good. The voice and sensibilities of James Fearnley heard there. Thanks again, James, for joining us. Fantastic album. I listened to the whole thing yesterday. I think you guys are going to love it. Check it out. Details at crankygeorge.com. We'll post the link for you along with the podcast at the end of the show when it becomes available. The Twitter feed is abuzz at A.B. Rice. Phone line is open, too, if you're listening live on Friday, October 14th at 347-857-4505. A couple of folks chiming in. Dondi is saying, listening live, you guys had a great rapport. I like the sounds. All right. Got a fan for you. And Pearlie says, love the show as usual. Good interview. Good sounding music, too. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to love it. Take a shot at it, kids. It's new, it's different, and, you know, it doesn't really fit easily into one category, but it just feel-good songs. And some of the songs aren't, you know, peppy, but they're really intriguing lyrics, and they just have a great musicality to them. It's eclectic, and it's good. And when you hear it, it's very distinct right away. So check it out. You can get the whole album and details on how to get it, download it, or get an actual vinyl copy. I think they have vinyls making a comeback these days at their website. Again, it's crankygeorge.com. So we're going to, as I said, keep the music moving because we need it after this week, right? And maybe you want to get a drink or two. You want to drop some quarters in the jukebox. Got some plans tonight to see you at Denny's All-Star Joint. Here's Ricky Lee Jones.
Keep your feet in the street. The toes are on. it's only world famous because you won't shut up about it.
On the Amy Beth Arkaway Show and Not So Forgotten 45 for Leo. Thanks for chiming in. Make your political connections as you see fit. Also, J.D. McPherson, a young guy with an old kind of fun time sound, Northside Gal, and the great Ricky Lee Jones, all headed down for a little weekend romp at Danny's All-Star Joint. It is the Amy Beth Arkaway Show. Thanks again to James Fearnley for joining us from the group Cranky George. Their first album, Fat Lot of Good, it drops today. And lots of folks are chiming in already on the Twitter feed at AB Writes. Phone line if you're listening live on Friday, October 14th, 347-857-4505. David chiming in. Hey, really enjoy your show. Great interview style. The music is cool, too. All right, David, thank you. Carla says, like the show as always, we'll check out Cranky George's music at the end of the show. Sounds like a good deal. And Britt says, James sounds like a fun fellow. I'm liking the sounds of his band. All right, there you go. I think you're going to enjoy it. Check it out. And as we mentioned, a big day for music fans and literature fans yesterday as Bob Dylan received the Nobel Prize in Literature. First time an American was awarded that revered honor since Toni Morrison in 1993, the acclaimed novelist. There's some controversy surrounding whether a songwriter deserves this, but you know what? His canon of work, there's poetry, there's storytelling, there's so much there that I say that yes, he was awarded it for breaking out poetic expressions in new ways, and I think it is deserved. But, you know, as we discussed in our conversation with James, you know, the idea of awards is all subjective anyway, and what does it matter? But it is a big honor, so it does matter a bit. So let's listen to one of his story songs, this one about Reuben Hurricane Carter. It's called Hurricane. I also thought of it because in the wake of the devastation of Hurricane Matthew and all the people that suffered in Haiti and all the deaths and destruction there and our friends in Florida and the Carolinas who are still cleaning up and suffering, we wish them all the best. And congratulations to Bob Dylan on that well-deserved, if surprising, Nobel Prize in Literature. Here it is, Hurricane, on the Amy Beth Arkaway Show. Mm-hmm.
In the old Algeria greed. ties. I'm free to drink martinis and watch the sunrise. While Ruben sits like Buddha in a 10-foot cell. An innocent man in a living hell. Yes, that's the story of the hurricane. But it won't be over till they clear his name. And give him back the time he does. Put in a prison cell, but one time. He could have been the champion of the world. Time.
simple twist of fate. That's Joan Baez doing her former boyfriend's song, Bob Dylan, of course, who just was awarded, the very prestigious Nobel Prize in Literature. And his song, Hurricane, about Reuben Hurricane Carter, the boxer turned wrongly convicted bank robber and murderer, later cleared. And, of course, they had that great movie with Denzel Washington all about it. So, good stuff. Indeed. A lot of controversy, I guess, surrounding Bob Dylan winning the Nobel Prize. I'm not sure there should be, but some people feel that way. Twitter feed AB writes, Jess joins in. He says, Bob is great, but they should have a Nobel Prize for songwriting. Then I wouldn't argue. Literature is different. Well, it's only different if you put that slant on it. I hear what you're saying, but again, we categorize too many things. And they broke with tradition of normally giving it to poets or fiction authors. Because he really is a poet and a fiction author in a lot of ways, because there's so many stories in his songs, and he really did break through new expressions. That's what they said when they awarded it for him. So I'm on the side of saying he deserves it. I'm also on the side of saying, you know, awards are very subjective, and there's always controversy and always quibbles that you can make about them. But someone who has such a career and such a canon of work deserves recognition. You could make that argument. But either way, up for grabs, up for your interpretation. I agree with that. Twitter feed is AB Wright's. Phone line is 347-857-4505. We have gremlins in the system. Trudy tearing her hair out. A couple of things. I hope you can hear me. Is this thing on? We've had a couple of glitches, but we're getting through. No problem. We hope. We'll do the Inspiration Action Challenge in a moment. First, we got to do this one. It's not a not-so-forgotten 45, also political overtones, undertones. You decide for Carol. She says she wants to send this one out to the Trump campaign and all his supporters, talking heads and burning down the house. Here we go. Starts slow, then it builds.
Until the party's over.
hour burning down the house. I'm the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, Not So Forgotten 45 for Carol, Talking Heads, do with it what you will. Hope we're working okay on with the microphone. We had a couple of glitches here, but hopefully we are. Want to do our Inspiration to Action Challenge success story. It's Candace in Southport, is it Rhode Island, I think. She says, working on painting and writing, really got some help out of the challenge, gave me a real boost of inspiration, so thank you so very much. Just getting started, I hope. Yeah, I think you are. You have that inspiration. I can tell that enthusiasm. Candace, keep us posted, and please keep going. Hey, if the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. You deserve it. You helped spur other folks on, I think. And the place to reach out with that missive is AmyBethArkawy, ArkaWy.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed. Also the place to go if you need some cajoling. We can start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. And I'll give you a primer on the challenge, a few other tips and tricks, and see if we can get you on a more creative course, because it's really about getting in touch with that inner artist and that joyful source. I'll try to propel you if I can. We'll see. Hey, while you're at the website, you can also peruse my stories. The Eliza Gordon Mysteries are up for grabs. Killing Time, the Mystery and Mayhem Award-winning Dead Silent, the new One Murder She Tweets, all available for ebook and paperback from Cozy Cat Press. There are a few other goodies there, too. You can also chime in about your guest suggestions and big story and Forgotten 45 requests. So have at us, one-stop shopping, at the website, amybetharkowy.com. And we'll also have links to other things as well. By the way, at the end of the show, I hope you're hearing us, we will send links out about Cranky George. Their album drops today, Fat Lot of Good. Really enjoyed talking with James Fearnley, and their songs are great. I recommend you go on their website, crankygeorge.com. Check out the album. You can download it digitally. You can also get, rare vinyl editions, all kinds of good stuff there. Find out more about this intriguing band and their sound. I think you're going to like it. Hey, Halloween is around the corner, and there's some places, some campuses, where you have to be careful what kind of costume you wear. University of Florida, they're going to have counselors on staff to help people who are traumatized by some of the costumes they see. We are taking political correctness and trauma and all this to a new level. In the meantime, we have a vulgarian running for president. Do you see the disconnect here? Do you see why we're in trouble? I don't want to get into politics too much today. I really don't. I hope you have a great weekend. We're going to send you out with a couple of pre-Halloween tunes. And don't forget, end of the month, we have our annual Spooktacular on the way with a lot of your favorites, that's for sure. But here's a song. It's the same name, two different songs. It's called Ghost Train, one from Marcone and one, an older one, from The Swanks. Say, drive safe, play nice, dream big. Thanks to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, Emil at headquarters. And thank you for joining us. I hope you come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Take care.
Everybody talks about some fateful day, but I guess that this was mine. I may be here to tell some kind of story, but I think it's gonna take a little time. That's alright. See, I'm rocking in a cradle down a hall somewhere, and I am lost inside. Maybe I am falling, maybe I am flying, but I know if I am crying, she's holding me. And then the sky broke up, and then the rain came down, and it washed away everything on the ground. Wash it away, wash it away. That bottle filled with lightning and rain. He keeps calling out for someone, but she's riding on a train. Riding on the ghost train. But she keeps on riding. She's gonna keep on riding. Mama, keep on riding. Afternoon. Riding on the ghost train. Riding on the ghost train. Riding on the ghost train.